Chapter 13. The house burned for 2 days. Denton and I, dead on our feet, took shifts turning back anyone trying to extinguish it. I must have slept at some point, but I honestly have no memory of it. I listened to the roar of the fire and thought of Roderick saying, "I know exactly where I would place the match." If the tarn glowed, it was swallowed up by the orange reflections. At last, when there was clearly no saving the house or anything in it, we went to the village inn. I slept for 18 hours straight, waking only to drink cold tea and piss it out again. Surely if the water had been boiled for tea, it would be safe. Surely. When I finally got up, I checked the mirror for any sign of white wool on my tongue. I couldn't see any. I stumbled down to the common room and found Denton huddled near the fire. "You look like I feel," I told him.
"What a coincidence," he said. "I feel about how you look."
I collapsed into the other chair by the fire. The innkeeper brought me a mug of something. It was hot. That was all I cared about. We sat there and I drank whatever was in the mug and slowly felt human again. It was not an unmixed blessing. It meant that I could think again. And my thoughts were a horror. Judging by the circles under Denton's eyes, his weren't much better.
"I keep thinking of what it could do," said Denton.
"Take us over, you mean?"
"Not just that."
Denton hitched his chair a little closer.
"It could move people around. It was learning to talk. Suppose it got better at it. Good enough that no one gave it a second thought. Suppose it spread."
The chill in my bones seemed to radiate outward. "It could go anywhere," I said softly. "Reproduce itself. We'd be at its mercy. Just extensions of it, like the hairs." Denton nodded. Madeline had said that the tarn meant no harm. Probably neither did rabies. We could not risk humanity on the continued goodwill of an infant monster that could puppet the dead. I grabbed the poker and stirred up the log, trying to warm myself. "How do we know it's not in us already?"
"I don't know. I think maybe if we don't get a lung full of lake water, we might be all right. It seems to start in the lungs. And Madeline kept going back to the water. Maybe to, I don't know. Maybe so the bit that was in her could talk to the bit in the lake. So maybe if we can destroy what's in the lake somehow."
He trailed off. I wondered if there was enough alcohol in the village to cleanse the lake, or hell, if there was enough alcohol in all of Galatia. "How the hell do we destroy a lake?" I asked as the front door opened.
"Well," said Angus, stamping his feet on the mat, "the wagon load of sulfur we brought seems like a good start."
1,200 pounds of sulfur. I stared from Angus to Miss Potter and back again. "Where did you get? How did you get?" Miss Potter had clearly traveled hard and suffered for it. Her hair was a wild gray tangle, and there were immense bags under her eyes. Yet her back was as ramrod straight and her upper lip as stiff as ever. And I was inordinately glad to see both. Angus looked like Angus. Angus always looks like Angus.
"Sulfur," said Miss Potter primly, "is used in the treatment of scab, rust, and a number of other fungal ailments affecting fruit trees. When it became abundantly clear that the authorities were not going to listen to anything we had to say, we stopped by several of the orchards farther down the valley. This is, I am told, the very finest Sicilian sulfur, which is considered superior to the American sort.
Madam, said Denton, while normally I might try to defend the honor of my countrymen, at this moment I could kiss both you and your Sicilian sulfur.
You'll do no such thing, grumbled Angus. Or I'll call you out, doctor.
And Miss Potter actually blushed. Where's Hob? I asked, as we went outside.
Down the valley, standing surety for the return of the wagon and team.
Hob was worth three times as much as the pair of draft horses standing in harness. But this was definitely not the time to quibble. The two feather-footed brutes could pull, that was certain. The wagon was piled high with sacks, but they did not shirk, not even when the four of us climbed on as well. Angus took up the reins. To my surprise, Aaron joined us. Angus nodded to him. His face was lean and he looked as weary as the rest of us.
We're poisoning the lake, said Denton bluntly.
Oh?
I closed my eyes while Denton explained about a fungal disease in the lake that caused madness. It was as good an explanation as any, and close to true. Aaron considered this.
Not surprised, sir. We've known that lake's bad since my grandfather's day.
You and Mary should take care, said Denton carefully. It may be spread by drinking the lake water.
I could hear the disbelief in the man's voice.
Nobody drinks that water, sir.
Denton paused.
But in the house?
There's a well. A good deep one.
I turned my face away so that no one would see the tears of relief running down it. Angus and Miss Potter were silent when we reached the ruins. Smoke still rose in thin wisps from the wreckage. The lake was silent, deceptively placid. We grabbed the bags. The powder struck the surface of the water, and for an instant, I feared that it would not sink. But then I watched the granules begin to settle. And then they mixed with the water, forming dark swirls that sank deeper into the tarn. I had turned away to grab a second bag when green radiance flared around us. I saw the glow on the side of the wagon, and the stolid horses shied in sudden alarm. Angus moved to take their heads, murmuring soothing nonsense.
I dare say that it knows it is under attack, murmured Miss Potter.
Huh, said Aaron. The tarn blazed up with sickly light. Pale, gelatinous shapes pulsed in the depths, but it had no power to reach us. I dumped out another bag, then another. My hands caked with the stuff. The tarn could not die fast enough. I even dared to walk over the causeway, among the cracked stones still radiating heat, and throw handfuls as far out into the water as I could reach.
Oh God, I thought. Will it be enough?
Slowly, slowly, the light dimmed. I came back for another bag, but Angus stopped me.
We've used it all, he said.
We need more.
No, look.
Miss Potter pointed. The light was almost gone. As we watched, it pulsed a few more times and then nothing. We waited for over an hour as the sun sank, and there was no change. No glow rose from the water. The jelly-like shapes vanished under the darkness, and everywhere was a heavy smell of burned things.
Is it done? I whispered.
She nodded to me, that fine, stern woman with the heart of a lion.
I believe, Lieutenant, that it is done.
I'll keep an eye on it, offered Aaron. If there's any more lights, we'll do what's needful.
All right, I said.
My voice was hoarse and rasping in my ears. And if you see any hares, any animals coming to the water to drink, shoot them and burn the bodies. It's important.
Aye, sir. We will.
He reached over and grabbed my forearm. I wondered how dreadful I must look that he was trying to comfort me when his home was a smoking ruin behind us. And then we drove away and left behind the dead lake and the smoldering timbers of the fallen house of Usher.